This is Anna Hartley on Friday, the 24th of January 2025, for the Stories of the Docks project. So, could I ask you both to tell us your name and your year of birth?
My name's Jeanette Gregory, 1512-1949.
And I'm Lisa Smith, and my year of birth is 1969.
Could you tell us about your family history in the fishing industry or your links to Grimsby Docks?
There's a links all the way through my family on my father's side, his adopted family, should I say, and they all had links with the docks or fishing, and we lived so close to the docks. There was lumpers, dockers, fishermen, lorry drivers, but all to do with the docks. So that the links are there all the way through the family.
And my links, I'm going to just talk about, so I've done a bit of research in our family. So Jeanette is my mum, and I've done some research about her father, my granddad, who was adopted by a family in Grimsby, and they had links with the docks, but also his adoptive mum, her first husband was a fisherman that came from Salcombe in Devon to Grimsby to work as a trawlerman. He was lost at sea, but then as my mum, Jeanette, has already said, then more of the family were part of the fishing industry, and Jeanette, my husband, my dad, he was also a fisherman. So our links with the docks have been both as part of a family growing up, but also when we've looked back at the history of our family, it goes back quite a few generations.
And what were both of your ambitions whilst you were at school?
I wanted to be an artist, but I had to go to do shorthand and typing. And so didn't really have a choice. And I only worked in an office for a little while because I got pregnant when I was really young and got married.
And my ambition at school was to leave as quickly as possible, and I thought that the best way to do that would be just to think about going in to do hairdressing as soon as I left school. So that was my ambition, to go and be a hairdresser.
And Jeanette, how did you end up working down the docks?
Because my husband was a fisherman. At first he worked for Olaf Christensen, Kurt Christensen's brother. He worked on his boat for him, and they all needed nets cleaning because it's gill netting that they did, and they had hundreds of nets that they used to put out in the sea, but each time they came back into Grimsby they had to have them cleaned before they went out again.
Lisa, how did you end up working on the docks?
As Jeanette, my mum, has just said, she was roped in, there you go, there's a pun, roped in to clean the gill nets, and as a young teen, it was just a great way of earning some pocket money. So I used to go when I could, mainly on the weekends and school holidays, to help all the women that were cleaning the nets, and so I used to come and do it as a little part-time job after school.
And could you explain what the process was of cleaning the gill nets?
I can't say how long they were, but there was lead weights along the bottom, like rings, really heavy rings all the way along the bottom of the nets. And the nets were about 150 yards, I would have thought. Oh, I might be exaggerating, it might be 150 feet. Feet, it sounds more realistic. And they were very long. So weights at the bottom and floats at the top. And so you had to find the beginning of the net and put, there was a stick that you put the floats on, and at the other side you put the rings over your arm as you cleaned it, and you kept gathering them up, but taking all the dead fish and starfish and smelly stuff out of the nets and picking all the things out of the nets that were really yucky and making them clean again. And you gathered all the rings up on your arm, and then you tied this rope that was on the end to the rings to get them all together, and then put the other end that had the floats on through that into a nice little bundle ready to start again. And so then the men would get them over their arm when they were at sea, and the other end on this other thing, can't remember what they call it, and shoot them out into the sea, and they'd lay along this, over wrecks of boats and things like that. That's where all the fish gather, and they'd put them sort of round the wrecks so the fish would swim into them. So that's the process of why the nets had to be clean and to keep redoing them. So it's a big job if the men were doing that at sea as well as catching the fish. And they did sometimes do it if they were away for a long time. But when they came home, that's was a few that my husband's mother used to do it as well, and my sister-in-law. We was a few of us that did it.
And you said it was a bit yucky doing this. Could you tell us a bit more about what it was like?
It was, for a start, it was really cold, even in the summer, because we were in like a really old warehouse that the sun didn't get in. It was really, really cold and wet. And just the ordinary smells of fish when it's gone off is bad enough, but when it's been sat in nets for quite a long time, the worst thing was the starfish. And at certain times of the year, there were jellyfish, and they used to call them slubbers, I think, the fishermen. And when you're picking them out of the net, they'd sting you if you had them on your hands, obviously, if you had gloves on. But if they splashed you in the face or anything, it really stung, and it was really, really, really disgustingly smelly, all of it. But you just thought, pop the money.
I think for me, coming down as a teenager, as Mum's described, it was like a big warehouse with big wooden, I think they were like big wooden doors that like slid. So you'd go in, and it was really, really cold. And so the only way that you would warm up is just keep moving and doing the job as fast as possible. One of the things that, Jeanette and my mum has described is about how the stench, so walking in, but when you're in there, you get used to the smell, because then you've been working in it. But you'd see the nets. I remember going and seeing them all in a big pile and thinking, how on earth are we going to tackle this? But obviously the women were used to that, and so going in as a teenager, I was just in awe of these women that would be just get to the task and not be moaning about it. There would be some complaints about if some of the nets were really bad, particularly if there was all really tangled, and having to try and detangle them before you could even start cleaning them. But just like the sight of a tangled mess of nets, and then at the end of the day just being really proud that you'd actually taken that tangled mess with all of the fish heads and anything, all the debris from out of the ocean, that you'd cleaned them all out, and that you could see your work and how it was just then all in good neat piles ready to start again. And just thinking, but reflecting back, if it wasn't for the women and how hard they worked in those really old stores, the men wouldn't have been able to go out to sea anyway. And so it was a really essential job to do, and just needed doing. And so you knew, I don't know, that the women, because they were related to the fishermen, they knew that if they didn't get the nets out, there would be no money coming in. So it was a win-win situation. You got paid for cleaning the nets, but also you cleaned the nets because you knew that the men had to go out to earn some more money. So it was a win-win situation all around. So being part of that, that's a reflection rather than thinking that at the time. But at the time it was just that, this is just a really disgusting job, but there's money at the end of it, so you're just going to get through it.
Can I just say, there was some men that did it as well. Men with husbands and wives, or two couples, I remember distinctly, that used to come down and do it. We didn't know them, but they'd been doing it for a while before us. And so it wasn't just all women. There were just a couple of men. But the women work harder, don't they? Because we always have it, so in fact. We'd get £1.50 a net.
And what would that equal to in today's money?
Well, it was the early 80s, so...
How many nets would you have cleaned in a day?
Well, if they were in good condition, we could get through about 30 or 40 in a day. And we'd share it between us, me and my sister-in-law, who I did it with. We'd share the money between us, or give, like, Lisa some money. But if the nets were really bad, we'd perhaps only do 10 in a day, and that was because sometimes the nets needed repairing. They had big holes in and they'd get all really tangled, and we had to sort that out before we could even start doing it, and then we had to put them aside for mending. So you didn't sort of get much pay for nets that were in a mess anyway. And you think the fair thing would you'd get more because you're working out, right? but it's sometimes it took us a long time, and other times we just got loads of money in a day, and I spend it nearly all on my three girls going dancing.
I think the question, it's a difficult one, because it was really cash in hand, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
So you didn't have an hourly rate, it was piecework, so depending on how many you cleaned. And if it was £1.50 per net and you only got through 10 nets, and then that was between two of you, then the pay was less than minimum wage, as you'd think of it today. So it was really hard work, but probably poor pay on those days, but hard work and good pay if you got a good day where you got through a lot of nets. So it was, I think trying to compare it to today's salary, it would have been, I suppose, just a very low paid job.
And it wasn't
low paid manual work. Yeah.
It wasn't regular either, because you'd only do it when they came in from sea for two or three days, because then they'd be going out again unless the weather was bad. So you had to get them done quick as possible. And then you'd have a week maybe that where you didn't have any work. So luckily it wasn't something that you had, that we were doing as the main breadwinners. It was like money for the, like women who have a part-time job and just do it for a bit of pin money sort of thing. But we needed it, really.
And could you tell me a bit more about which area of the docks that you worked on?
We worked on Auckland Road, is this? I think it's Auckland Road. Next, in a storeroom. Ah, yeah, it is Auckland Road. A storeroom owned by Kurt Christensen's company, and that was the main place we did them. We did also work on the north wall at another building, but that was if we were doing nets for somebody else. And so there were several times we did them for other boats when we'd work on the north wall. But then if it was a Danish boat, sometimes we would work on the actual boat on the deck, cleaning the nets, which was a bit dire in the winter. We've actually been down there, and I'm not exaggerating, it's been snowing and about that deep all over the boat, and cleaning nets in those conditions. So that wasn't sort of all the time, because you don't get snow very often, do you, in Grimsby, but we did do that as well.
It sounds like you were expected to continue in all weathers.
Yeah.
You didn't stop if the weather was
bad. Agreed to do the nets if they needed us. That was our verbal contract, if you like.
And you said you worked in a warehouse to clean the nets. What was the atmosphere like with the people that you worked with?
It was really fun. We made it fun. And we did literally take our big tape player down and played music all day and sang all day. And it really sort of lifted your spirits when you're doing a job like that. Just used to know all the words to all the songs from all the musicals. It sounds really old-fashioned. We didn't sing pop songs. but we had a good time.
I think for me as a 13-year-old coming down, so when we talk about Auckland Road, Auckland Road is directly opposite the pontoon. So you'd come down and it would be really, really busy. It was at a time when the fish market would have finished because that was really early in the mornings, but you'd have still seen the lumpers with the barrows barring the kits of fish away to the relevant merchants that had bought it. So it was a real hive of activity, and you'd come down Auckland Road, you'd have to go past the ice house with the ice chutes providing ice to the boat, so that was a constant, that belt would be constantly going. And you'd arrive, and where we're sat now doing the interview was Kurt Christensen's office, and the warehouse was literally next door, and it's now a car park. But in that warehouse, you would open the door, you'd hear the music, and my vivid memory is the songs from Evita, the musical. So I just know all of the songs from Evita. I absolutely love it. So when Madonna did the film, sang in the film Evita a few years ago, you know, it was just music to our ears because we knew all the lyrics. So it was a really, really great atmosphere, and it just carried you through the day to have that. And I don't really remember anybody falling out. There was I think because we all knew each other, or particularly you as women and me as your daughter, there was no falling out, and I don't think I ever felt that I wasn't pulling my weight or somebody was going to come and tell me off for not doing a good enough job. Everybody was just in it together and telling you what to do, and it was really tough, but, and so I don't want to glamorise it, but it was really tough, but the women got through it, and I used to like going down just because of the atmosphere that they created, and just keeping jovial and singing and not looking at it as a negative thing, that you just come down and actually enjoy being together as women.
And in the warehouse that you worked in, roughly how many people would there have been in at one time?
Not a lot, because you need so much space to clean the nets. Like I say, they were really, you had to sort of spread them out as best you could. And I wish I could.
Did you used to work in pairs?
Yeah.
So there would be you and Auntie Anne.
Yeah.
And then Nana, and who else? Was it Julie or Eileen?
Okay. My friend used to do it.
And so would there have been anybody else when you was?
Yeah, that man and woman that.
So there'd
been
six.
There's probably about
three
six
pairs.
Of us. Yeah.
And then a teenager. Then,
yeah, and the odd time, one or other of the other children used to come as well. But not a lot of us in there, because they just couldn't fit us in with the nets as well.
It sounds like when you were describing the people that were in there, that there was quite a few of you within your family that were working.
Well,
you know,
it's
with
my
you.
Husband's family, yeah, mostly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what was that like working with your family?
Well, all right, wasn't it?
We all lived near each other anyway. So as part, growing up in the 70s, and this, when we're talking about late 70s, early 80s now, we all lived close by. We all, majority of us lived on the Arbour Estate in Grimsby. And in those days, I remember my dad's mum, and they lived just down the road. So if we needed, we'd run out of milk or sugar, we'd be sent down to run down to borrow a cup of sugar, and that's just how it was. So there was a very much a community family feel to where you lived anyway, and everybody helping each other out. And because of the connection with the fishing trade, with the family, then the family, it was almost like everybody from the family came together to actually enable the guys to go out to sea. So,
yeah, like Kurt Christensen's brother Olaf, we did his nets, because he had a gill netter as well, and he was married to my husband's sister. So it was everybody all intertwined with each other.
And could you tell us about a best memory or a highlight that you have from your time working on the docks?
I've got one. If I start this question, because then you can have time to
go
think.
On then.
So my best memory is, it must have been a week where the nets weren't so bad and they weren't so tangled, and it must have been part school holidays, because I remember being on the docks for a few days and having enough money then to go onto Freeman Street, and there was a shop called Ara Fashion Jeans, and I remember being able to go and buy my first pair of really tight jeans. And so that's the best memory, knowing that I'd earned this money and I could go down Freeman Street and buy some new clothes. So that was a good memory for me.
Yeah, I can't say that I have a specific memory. I just know the money that I earned and my sister-in-law, who I work with, the reason we had songs from the musicals that we sang, we used to save up and go to London for the weekend and watch a musical with our money. So that's a highlight that we got. That's what we got from it, cleaning the nets for ourselves. We would go to London and watch a musical, and so that was quite a good thing to me. It was a big incentive to do it, as well as being able to afford for the girls to go dancing.
I think when we talk about sort of the fishing industry and where we are now, post that industry being at its peak, again looking back with fond memories of the dock, we've spoken about repairing nets, but there are so many fond memories in relation to my dad going to Co-Salt to get the supplies for the boat to go on fishing, on his fishing fishing trips to work on at sea, and getting Fry's Terry's chocolate orange, because he used to get chocolate from Co-Salt. So we might have got a treat. So I always look forward to him going to Co-Salt, thinking, we might get a bit of a chocolate bar on this trip, and just that real hive of business on the docks was quite incredible, wasn't it? Coming down, it was really a town in itself.
Yeah. And mainly it was a family affair. There was Kurt's office, but there was also Co-Salt, that had boats and Consolidated Fisheries. They had boats, and they were all families. More than one brother who had a boat that went out from that company. So it was all sort of really community based, all of it. After the trawlers went belly up, and it was all like sea netters, gill netters, and things like that. There were smaller boats, so it was more like a community, I would say.
It must have been quite a community, because I'm just thinking. So my sister, when she had her first child, and she and Hannah is now
35.
Her christening party was on the docks at TC's. TC's isn't there anymore, but TC's was a pub, a club, and so her christening party was actually on the docks. So you would never, you never hear about people coming to the docks to have a party. Never mind a christening party, but everybody gathered on the docks for that christening party.
Yeah, they did. But a lot, everybody went in TCs on landing day as well. Before the, it was only around the corner here. It was sort of over there.
So where's that, Mum? It was part of the Casper. It was part of what we know as the Casper now.
If that's the main road, I think it was somewhere around about there.
Cross Street,
yes. And these people used to go there before they went to into the pubs, like the Humber Pub and down Freeman Street and all that. They used to go in TC's club first a lot of the time. Kurt Christensen used to go in every single day.
They used to do food as well in there,
yeah.
Didn't they?
Yeah, it was a nice club to get together in. It wasn't rough or anything. It was really nice. So.
And what do you think is important for the younger generation to learn or to understand about the docks?
The sacrifice, I think. Like men going away and leaving the families for long periods of time, and the women being tough and having to bring up the families without the men there, but just how resilient everybody was, and that sort of thing's missing out of society nowadays, I think. The, like, because it's I want, I get society really now, isn't it? Well, that's my opinion. But I think it's the resilience of the whole family in different ways. But the women went through a lot, but they still stood by the husbands, and the husbands used to come home, and if they didn't catch any fish, they didn't get any money and all things like that. What an hard life. I can't imagine anybody nowadays going out to work and saying, oh, well, I'll go out and I'll be away from my family for 3 weeks like they used to on the trawlers. And when I come back, I might not have any money, or I might be in debt because we haven't caught any fish. Can you imagine that? Yes, and they've got 6 or 7 kids at home. It would be awful, wouldn't it? We were never as bad as that. I remember once when we had a few sticky moments, I did sell a gold bracelet that my husband bought me so we could pay the electric bill. But that was the worst it got, I think. But once he got his own boat, it was really quite good for us. We did a lot of things that we wouldn't have been able to afford. But you don't just see that getting back to what people nowadays should learn about what it used to be like. It is how families went through very tough times and how they came out of it still good. And brought up some good, decent kids that did well from really hard beginnings. Yeah, that's the thing that I think they should take out from it.
Thinking about the docks and the place that the docks held in relation to building the town, we've got the rail line. That's all part of the docks heritage and why we've got a rail line into Grimsby. Understanding that people, as Mum Jeanette has said, the sacrifices that people had to make, the lives that were lost just in your job, just going to work. So many people didn't come back from sea, particularly from the Icelandic trawlers. It was a really, really tough, hard career, but everybody tried to make it as best they could in under the circumstances. And I think one of the things that I would hope that this today's generation think of when they look at the docks is remember the sacrifice, and as Mum has said, the resilience, but also that coming together and people being happy with what they had, but expecting that they would get more as well, that it wasn't that they would just be happy with a lot and not have any aspiration. They would be happy with what they had, but aspire to improve their and their family's life. So my dad was, he started as a going on a boat, and then he became the boat owner. So the dreams and the aspirations were there, and that's one thing that I'd say for young generation. It was tough, and people worked really hard, and they worked really hard, and hoped that that hard work would pay off. Sometimes it didn't, but it didn't stop them from continuing to work hard.
I think that's why the fishermen were so bitter when the government sold them down the river, because everything was against them. They're just the quotas. In the end, my husband, he was, if he found a good fishing ground, I think it initially it was before all the quotas and stuff became really rigid. You'd think, oh great, it's caught a good trip and lots of money, and that's really good, and we can go on holiday and all sorts. And then they introduced all these quotas because of how the Spaniards came in with their deep water fleet and just trawled the seas and raped them, if you like. And so they had to bring in the quotas because the cod went down so much. It would have just been decimated. There wouldn't have been any fishing at all. But the governments, like in the EU, they let this happen with other countries, and our fishermen were totally neglected. So if my husband, in the end, had a good place where he knew he could get fish, sometimes he couldn't even go and fish it because he'd already got his quota for that month. And it got said that you were just on the cusp of not even earning a living because everything was against you. If you didn't catch the fish, you wouldn't earn. If you caught the fish, you weren't allowed. Some people were throwing it back in because the quota was too much for that month. They caught too much for the quota, sorry. And so it was really bad in the end. They did sell the fishermen short, the governments. And I think they just looked on it as it's a loss. We'll toss up between farmers and fishermen. Well, fishermen, they've never been thought of as much. Because I think it's got, if you work on the sea, you're sort of away from people, and people don't think about you so much. With Iceland, when the trawling fleet went, Iceland stuck by the guns, and so they ended up with all the fishing rights. It just seems like everybody everywhere was always looked after by their own country, better than our country ever was with our fishermen. And so that's why our fleet is not there anymore. We haven't got one, have we? There's a few down in Brixham and stuff, but there's nothing here anymore. And it's such a shame. Have I gone off track a bit? What was we talking about? I can't remember. That's my age.
And is there anything else, any memories or anything else that you would like to add at this point?
No, there isn't any, not any other memories, but the fishing industry is still important in Grimsby. There's a fish processing industry that is still really thriving, and we can't forget that that's still a really important element of today's economy for Grimsby. And so my husband now, he works repairing factory lines for the fish processing element of the fishing trade. So it does continue, and we need to ensure that we celebrate that, because it is part of our legacy, and we do live next to the sea, and that's why we can do it. And so I would say that we really need to think about how we understand what's left as well, in terms of the fish processing side of the industry.
I don't look at it, on it as optimistically as that. I think it's just dead. That's how I think. When I come, probably because I have seen more than you what it was like, and so it just seems, like totally gone. And because we're an island, it shouldn't be like that, should it? Really, we've got all that coastline where and all that sea that we could have, and still have a fishing industry, because we all like fish and it's really good for you. Well, most of us like fish. Do you like fish now, Lisa?
I've always liked fish.
Yeah, I don't know whether you've gone off it in your old age. Yeah, it upsets me when I have to pay more for a piece of fish than, because we always buy our fish from down here, just on what they call it.
Whilst Mum's trying to think of that, I've just thought
Premier Seafoods and Excel, we buy our fish from there. Yeah,
I've just thought of a funny story from the fishing from back in the day, when Dad used to come home from sea and bring lobster.
Oh yeah.
And bring, so we was really poor, we didn't really have a lot, but we'd have lobster on the table. But lobster, you cook lobster live, or we used to, don't know whether that's still a thing that you do, but we used to, so we'd have live lobster on the draining board. And I remember one time, it was near Christmas, and I really wanted to take my teacher something in for Christmas as a gift, but we didn't have any money, but we had lobster. So my dad said, you can take a lobster for your teacher. So I remember going in with my carrier bag into junior school and knocking on the staff room door and asking for Mr. Birkbeck and presenting this live lobster. And you'd think that was the end of the story, but I've now met the teacher. He lives near me now, and we still talk about that day when I knocked on the staff room door, and he said he went inside and was in amazement and walked into the other his colleagues and his teaching staff and just said, I've just been given a live lobster. And I asked him, I did say, did you actually eat it then? And he said yes, but I'm not convinced that maybe, I don't know what actually happened to the lobster, but yeah, that was one of his memories of being a teacher as well. He's retired now, but that was one of his fondest memories of a gift that he got as a teacher, was a live lobster.
That wasn't my story of lobster. My husband used to bring loads of lobsters home in lobster season, and they used to be, if we put them in the garage, and they used to be clip-clopping around the garage walk, and we had a baby Burko boiler that we bought from somewhere to cook the lobsters in. And there was this great big aggressive lobster one day, and it was up to me and my friend to boil the lobsters. I don't think I could do it now. But we had to plunge them in head first in this baby Burko boiler, and so the water was boiling, and I got this big lobster held on its back, and tipped it up and dropped it in head first, put the lid on the baby Burko and thought that was it, and it'd boil for however many minutes. Well, with that, this lobster, its front claws must have shot out and its tail shot up in the air, and the lid flew off the baby Burko spoiler, and we went running down the drive. We thought it was going to jump out and come back. We was terrified. I thought it was going to just jump out and do attack us or something.
Revenge of the Lobster.
Yeah. Stupid, isn't it? But that was funny. We had so many lobsters, we had to take them to the Chinese and swap a lobster for a Chinese meal. So... So that was my story on lobster.
Great, thank you.
Right.